All right, Trevor, say good morning. Good morning. Let us begin. So we are continuing Meretz Hashem. A little bit off schedule, but all right, we'll catch up in Meretz Hashem one of these days. So we are continuing today in Perek Gimel with the really incredible, fascinating discussion as to why it is that the righteous suffer. In other words, that we spoke about this idea that on one hand we've created a model where if a person has bitachon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of all of their needs. Yet, the Mechaber points out that we absolutely see that sometimes there are situations where the righteous suffer, and then there are other situations where the wicked prosper. So how do we reconcile that with the concept of bitachon? So I will say, now the Mechaber is going to discuss a variety of different reasons, actually five different reasons, as to why sometimes tzaddikim suffer in this world. So he says, ve'im kol zeh. Let me go ahead and explain this particular matter, that ultimately, again, that some level of explanation should Emeretz Hashem be sufficient. So he explains, Va'omer, ki aponim asher ba'avurim yimona me'atzadik his damnus tarfo, ach yitrach alavi bochin bo. So he's, I'm going to explain the reasons why sometimes a righteous person, his parnasa is withheld from him, and ultimately he's tested. So let's go through the reasons. Number one, after she avon shekadam lo ischayev li parmenu, kimo she'amar hin tzadik ba'aretz yishulam. Suppose say possibility number one is that perhaps the tzadik has a particular avera. Remember again, we operate with the assumption over here that there is no such thing as a person who doesn't commit averus. Every person has averus. So maybe the tzaddik has a particular avera, and therefore, again, his struggle with parnasa is the way, ultimately, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is helping him achieve atonement for his avera. As the pasuk says, "Hein tzaddik ba'aretz yushlam." Ultimately, again, the righteous man will pay for his sins on earth. Okay, so that's reason number one. Again, struggle of parnasa could be a result of one's particular averus. Okay, possibility two. V'yesh shiye al derech hatmura ba'olam haba, kimo shekasav lehitivcha b'achar isecha. So we'll say, interestingly enough, two and one are somewhat related. But two is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give the tzaddik the greatest maximum portion in the world to come. So how does he do that? Ultimately, again, by allowing some of his suffering and some of his difficulty to occur in this world. So there's almost like an exchange. Remember, again, it's somewhat similar to number one, because at the end of the day, number one is saying, perhaps the tzaddik committed an avera, and as a result of that avera, he has to go ahead and struggle for his parnasa. Possibility number two is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give the tzaddik a greater portion of the world to come. How does he do that? Through suffering in this world. Suffering in this world is redemptive. Suffering in this world allows one to atone for any averus that he may have, and therefore again a larger portion in Olam Haba. Okay? Possibility three. V'esh yelaros sivlo b'hazbarasa atova b'avodas habori isparach kidi shilamdu b'nei adam mimenu kimo she'edato me'inyan iyof. So this is fascinating. So possibility number three is the Mechaber explains that sometimes the Kodesh Baruch Hu visits suffering upon a tzaddik, ultimately, again, so that the tzaddik could show other people the ability to maintain a proper attitude, even in the face of adversity. Well, isn't that incredible? Isn't that incredible? That sometimes the tzaddik himself, you're right, is not deserving of the suffering. The tzaddik doesn't need the suffering, but rather the whole point of the suffering visited upon the tzaddik is for the tzaddik to model the right kind of behavior, for the tzaddik to model this concept, ultimately, that even in the face of adversity, there is the ability to go ahead and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Incredible idea. He gives the example of Iyov. Okay, number four. V'yesh shiyer l'rasha anshe doro, v'yibchanehu favor yis'ale ba'oni, Uberish Chubechaloim Laharos Chasiduso Va'avodaso Dehokim Mi Baladehem. So I'll say this is interesting. So ultimately, again, he says literally again, there are some tzaddikim who suffer in this world. He says, but it's not because of them. He says it's due to the wickedness of the people of their generation. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tests the tzaddik with poverty, with difficulty, with illness, in order to demonstrate his commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So again, what number four is saying is like this. And again, there is some a little bit of overlap between some of these concepts. But in number four, what the Mechaber is saying is as follows. That when the tzaddik suffers, and the tzaddik continues to go ahead and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ultimately, again, what he's showing, he's modeling proper behavior. And I will say, what is there between three and four? So watch this. In number three was about the ability to go ahead and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu despite adversity. Number four is the ability to show people that you could serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu even if your life is not perfect. So it's almost as if I would say, number three is a little bit about modeling kind of the right type of demeanor. Number four is about the ability to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu even when your life is not perfect. Well, I was going to say, let me talk about this outside for just a second. Sometimes we think that in order to have a proper spiritual life, all the pieces need to be in order, right? Everything needs to be just so. And the truth is, sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu visits suffering upon the tzaddik to show that even when the pieces are not in place, even when things are not in order, even when things are difficult, there is still the ability somehow to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Incredible, incredible idea. So again, in number three, so it's almost as if the ability to maintain a good attitude, even in the face of adversity. In number four, it's the ability to continue in one's service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even when all of the life pieces are not in place. Now, he adds in here, in contrast to the Rishayim. Now, it's a strong word, but he says, why, what did the Rishayim do? He says, the Rishayim only serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu when life is perfect. When everything is exactly as it needs to be, that's when they'll serve. But if there's any level of discomfort, any level of difficulty, they'll take that as an excuse not to serve. And number five, v'yesh shiyem mipnei she'eneno mekane elokim la'elokim lakachas hadin me'anshe doro kimo she'adate me'inyan eli ubanav she'amra b'makasuv v'haya kol adose v'vescho yavo lishtachem oslo. So I'll say reason number five, the Mechaber explains, is ultimately, again, could be that the righteous person, the tzaddik, is being punished. Why? Because he saw negative things occurring, and he did not do anything about it. The example he gives is from Eli, right? Eli HaKohen, the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, where Eli saw his own sons going off the derech, his own sons doing things wrong, but yet Eli never protested. And again, Eli's held accountable and liable for the failure to protest the negative activity of his children. So that could be another reason why the tzaddik ultimately is punished. Therefore, I will say, it turns out that the Mechaber advances five different reasons as to why the tzaddik could be punished in this world, even though he has complete bitachon. Reason number one is ultimately because of some avera that he committed. Reason number two is to give him a larger portion in the world to come. Reason number three is ultimately, again, to show people how to maintain the proper demeanor, even in the face of difficulty. Reason number four, to show people that you don't need all of your life circumstances to be perfect to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but one could serve Hashem even in the midst of a sea of imperfection. And reason number five is because perhaps the tzaddik saw something negative occurring and never protested. And I will say, failure to protest a wrong is in and of itself being complicit in that very wrong. And therefore, perhaps again, the tzaddik is being held accountable for that. Okay, incredible. And I will say, now watch this. Let's at least begin the next section. Now the next section he says, so now, I'll say again, just to be clear. Now, does that mean that every single time you see a tzaddik suffering, it's because of one of these five reasons? The answer to that, of course, is going to be no. Remember, what did we learn in yesterday's shir? What we learned in yesterday's shir is that, why do the righteous suffer? Because ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs a very large and complex world. And on Nistaros L'Hashem Elokeinu, that which is hidden belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Here the Mechaber is trying to give us insight. These are some possibilities as to sometimes why the righteous would suffer. But don't assume that if you see a righteous person suffering, it automatically fits into one of these constructs. Now remember, that's the first side of the equation. What's the other side of the equation? Why do the wicked prosper? Right? At the end of the day, why do the Rishayim sometimes have a very good life? So we'll say, let's at least begin this. He says, Aval tova zakel yisbarach ala rasha. So why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow the Rasha to succeed? So here we'll say he gives six reasons. Number one, Yesh shetiye ba'avor tova shekadma lo, yigmaleh elokim aleha ba'olam hazeh, kimo sha'amar umishalim lisonav alponav lahavido. V'tir gemu barishonim umishalim lisonayim tavan, Di'inun avdin kadmoi b'chayivon la'avdehon. So we'll say reason number one is the Rasha may have done something good. So because the Rasha did something good, therefore what? Therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewards him for his good. But where does he reward him for his good? In this world. In this world. So we'll say, just like there's no such thing as a tzaddik who doesn't do an aveira, there's also no such thing as a Rasha who never commits a mitzvah. Right? So because there's a Rasha who commits, oh, every Rasha commits mitzvahs as well. So therefore again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and sometimes repays the Rasha for his particular mitzvah in this world. Number two, the Yesh. Shetiyah al derech ha-pikadon etzlo, ad sheyitin la'akel yisbarach ben tzadik yeroi lo, kimo sha'amar yochin v'tzadik yilbosh, va'amar incredible. Reason number two is because sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that the Rasha is going to have righteous offspring. This is incredible. So therefore, what does Hashem do? Hashem gives the bracha to the wicked individual to hold almost like as a pikadon, as a deposit for his righteous offspring. Isn't that incredible? So in other words, the bracha is not for the Rasha. The bracha, ultimately, again, is for the tzaddik offspring that he's going to have. But so that the bracha should be available for the tzaddik offspring, he gives it to the Rasha now. Incredible. Number three, Vavsha shetiya siva gdol shavisivos, moso vera aso, kimo shakasov, osher shamar lebalov, lera aso. I will say, this is incredible, that sometimes, number three says, sometimes the bracha is in and of itself a punishment. Sometimes the bracha is a punishment. Because we all say, we all know this. Sometimes wealth is not a blessing. And sometimes material items are not blessings. But in fact, they become the very undoing of the individual. So sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu confers bracha upon the wicked person, not as a form of bracha, but in fact as a form of punishment. So we'll have to stop over here. We're three in. We have three more. Meretz Hashem, we will continue. Shkoyach.